Yes, it is exactly titled to match the state we're in. Virtual Insanities, the British funk and groove band Jamiroquai. And this is from their 2012 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. We start off late a little bit due to fundraising efforts, and I want to talk a bit about that. We will be undertaking our own fundraising efforts, and so that we can have the assurance of keeping things going at the station the way they ought to be going. I'll be doing my own version in the not too distant future. I'm reading the material and catching up so that you'll be in tune with me once we begin. Well, it's Free Your Mind Friday. This is our shared open forum where you can bring to the table anything you wish, providing you have a pretty pronounced or strong opinion about it. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's hear from you and what you have to say, what you've been thinking, what's on your mind. Okay. Well, you know, if you were to run into a person who has not been up to date on what's going on in the United States and you tell that person, you know, give a few highlights of the things that have been going on, and you take a look at that person's face, you'll see this look of bewilderment. How could this possibly be? Well, this is what it is. We are living in a time of chaos, a time of uncertainty, and it could be very scary if you let it permeate into your brain cells and take up residency there. But we have to find a way to compartmentalize things and move on. In compartmentalizing anything, you have to understand it so you know where to stash it. A lot of what's going on has nothing to do with us, but in the end, it does have a lot to do with us because we are on the receiving end of this madness, which doesn't seem to want to stop anytime soon. And I continue to repeat, our job in this time is to hold on to our sanity as much as possible. It's the one thing that will get us through. Hold on to your sanity, but understand, or try to understand, the insanity that surrounds us. We start with Jay from New York. Hello, Jay, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Eutrice, I hope that you are doing well in the listening audience ship out there is also doing well.
Thank you.
Two quick things. Number one, Manafort. I think that the sentence that he got based on white privilege and who he is, should be seen as what to be expected.
Well, first, what you need to do is to put it into context so everybody understands who and what you're talking about.
Well, Manafort was convicted of money laundering, dealing with the Russians, tax evasion, I think also bank fraud and all of these other things. At one time, he was the chairman of the president's campaign. He's just basically done a lot of dirty deeds around the world in regards to other government, and he wasn't reporting the income to the United States. So,
all right, that's a good start. I mean, you kind of gave us a synopsis of who this Manafort. His first name is Paul, by the way, and he went on trial. He was convicted of several charges and sentenced. The recommended sentence was what?
The recommended sentence, I think, was 19 to 24 years.
Yeah.
And he was given 47 months, I think it was, which to me, based on his privilege and his contact, basically, it's not really surprising. Now, the thing in regards to the balance will be when he's sentenced, I think, next week because of some state crimes that he was convicted of. They're now saying because of this life sentence that the judge may throw the book at him. I don't know. Personally,
well,
I don't care.
So what is your issue with it? What should we
concern? I have no issue with it. I understand white privilege. So if any issue is, why is everybody so upset about it? Why is everybody talking about the injustice of it? But when you have somebody like Kwame Kilpatrick doing 28 years, nobody really says anything about the overcharge in the amount of time that he received for basically, I think, the same type of crimes in a sense that Manafort was found guilty. So, no, I'm not upset about it at all. I think it's good he got that amount of time because every now and then the system needs to be shown how racist it is and the manner in which they treat people of color so totally different. Now, my second point is in regards to Congresswoman Omar. Let me say this, and let me be very, very clear
when,
about
when you
this.
Take Congresswoman Omar, don't just leave it there. Give her an identity. Give us an idea of who she is and why you are introducing an issue.
She's a congresswoman from Minnesota. She's been charged basically with making anti-Semitic statements, and the Congress
has
the so-called.
She has not been charged with making these statements. She was accused of making what the members of Congress deem to be anti-Semitic statements.
Okay,
now,
so she was accused of making anti-Semitic statements. I'd say basically she was charged. You know what I mean? Now, the thing is this, and let's be very clear. There is a double standard in this country when it comes to Israel. There is a situation in this country to where as if you are a person of color, you cannot say anything at all about Israel other than having the sickles get on national TV like the little girl, Meghan McCain, and start crying over
she is
how
not a
Israel...
little girl. Let's look. Here's the thing.
Hey,
you're
hey,
making
hey, you
a point, make your point. You don't have to put anybody down, and you don't
no,
have to
No,
call
you gotta, I'm not putting her down. I'm not putting, that's how little girls behave. Little girls
No,
behave like that.
but
You treat
you
small
are a
women,
grown
don't behave
man,
like
and
that.
you know that that's not the way you, I'm not even talking about her, that's not the way you want to be perceived.
It doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference how I'm perceived. The point of the matter is that there's a really tight double standard in this country that people are using to harm my people. So how I'm perceived is the message that gets out, and it's the point that's being put across. Now, here it is, Israel, and the manner in which they treat the Palestinian people is beyond horrible. It's beyond, in all honesty, what the South Africans did to the Africans in South Africa. So here it is now, we have a whole Congress that want to chastise and point out that she's saying things that should not be said. How is
But
it
that's
that with
true,
the
but that
type of
is not
money,
true. You have your facts a little bit screwed up a bit. The issue was that they wanted, a demand was made that she be singled out, and singled out with respect to making disparaging remarks or anti-Semitic, which is what they automatically they go there when you say anything critical. She didn't
but
say anything critical of
that's what
Israel.
I'm
She
that's what my
said
point is.
that there is, hold on, she said that there was an inordinate influence of Jewish organizations in the United States over what happens in the law, the making of the law, and how the people are regulated. That was deemed to be an anti-Semitic remark. So the initial demand was that she be singled out specifically, and
And
then the
face it, right?
Democrats fought back and said, no, if it is to be made, if there is a need to point out that we should the United States should not have somebody making disparaging remarks here about Jews, another about blacks, another about Latinos, make one statement and let it stand, which is what they did, which of course
Okay,
has
now the
come
reason,
into fire. We have to
let's
move
say
on,
why
though.
in
We have to move
honesty.
on. So we have to move on. So make your point and let's go.
The point is this. Why did they do that? And the only reason why they did do that was because of the new Democratic members who fought back against it. But if the new Democratic members did not fight back against it, then this would not have happened. They would have then gone about censuring her or doing something else to her. The final point is this. At some point in time, we're going to have to deal with this whole relationship of Israel and the United States and others, because why is it that Israel gets all of the money that they get from this country, but they don't even want to have a discussion with us in regards to reparations? So I'll leave
Well,
it there and have a beautiful day.
all of that has to do with power. The African American community for a long time has noted this imbalance, even from the point of view of where foreign aid is given. And it has been an issue for a long time, but it has not been dealt with squarely until we find the kind of leadership that says, this is a legitimate point, this is a legitimate argument. Why is it that you're cutting budgets for social programs in the United States for all people? And every year, no matter whether our economy is good, bad, or indifferent, Israel is guaranteed billions of dollars off the top. And it doesn't get its money in dribs and drabs. It gets it all in one lump sum. So there's a problem there. And there has been a problem there. And part of the problem is we do not have, across the board in Congress, people with any spine who understand that their first obligation is to Americans and that they ought to legislate fairly. That's the problem. Thanks for getting us started today. We go to Connecticut. Moki, you are on the air.
Peace be with you, Eutrice.
Thank you.
What
are you telling us today?
Oh, a few things if I can talk fast enough. There was a mistake made, an historical, a factual mistake made a couple of days ago. I believe it was Ron from Connecticut said that the Japanese used Korean women for their comfort girls. And I think I stated it was the Korean War. That's incorrect. It was during World War II the Japanese did that. Okay, so European and Eastern European Jews are not Semites. Palestinians are Semites. And I believe Sephardic Jews are Semites. Very minor amount of Sephardic Jews in the population in Israel. But I want to just remind everybody that the state of Israel is being run by non-Semitic Jews, Western European and Eastern European Jews. Now I'm going to jump to Gary may not like me saying this.
Before you go there, we'll stop here at the moment. Who is a Semite?
I just said that in my belief, and I could be wrong,
you
correct
just,
me.
You
and
just told me, you just said, who is not? But who
no, I said specifically,
is?
A Semite, a Palestinian is a Semite. A Sephardic Jew is a Semite. That is
by
the local
of what?
Definition. I don't think you can extend that definition to European Jews.
No, Semites.
They're not Semitic.
Hold on. Let me make my case here.
Sure.
Amharic, Ethiopic, Arabic speaking people are Semites, and their descendants are Semites because they were the original peoples of that region of that land.
I'm glad you included the Ethiopians.
Amharic, Ethiopic, and Arabic speaking people, for the most part. Israel built a nation by importing people. And in importing people also created a narrative that they ascribe to the Bible, where this land, you know, as the song says, this land is mine, God gave this land to me. Well, that's nice in a song, but it doesn't jive with historical fact. So we've had a running quarrel, I think, especially in Israel, about this business of who actually were the rightful inhabitants of Israel.
Yeah, come to the door.
The Palestinians are Semitic people.
Okay.
So Israel, what we know today as Israel, was essentially created by bringing assailed Jews from Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. And they today are, and their descendants essentially claim what is known today as Israel as their land. This is not an issue that will end anytime soon.
Right. Okay. I just wanted a little bit of inspection on that as to the definition of Semite. All right, so as
well,
much as Gary might help,
look it up and see how it is defined, even in a dictionary, how it is defined, and whether the definition fits the reality today. We have, I've run tapes by, what's his name now? His father was one of the generals who created who participated in the war that created this land known today as Israel. And he speaks directly to the point. that the Israel as defined today has nothing to do with the facts of the origins of that land, which was Palestine. Mm-hmm. All of Israel was Palestine. Even in
was
biblical
that
times,
Diane?
Palestine was like a United Nations. Everybody lived in Palestine and got along just fine. Until there came a point when it was decided that Jews, in order to fulfill a biblical covenant, should strive to establish a land of their own. And, of course, it started in Palestine.
I guess you have to look at the diaspora. You got to look at that question, too. How do all these people leave Palestine and then come back, you know, from all other nations? It's an interesting historical question.
It is.
But thank you for pronouncing it correctly, to say anti-Semitic instead of the other way, anti-Semitic. Yes. Along. Yes. Okay. So can I move to another topic real quickly?
Well, we're running out of time. We started today, and I'm trying to make up so that we could end on time.
I had two minor things I wanted to broach, but I'll skip ahead. There will be no new Green Deal or Green New Deal. There is no such thing without the revelation of hydrogen gas, not liquid. All the countries of the world, India, China, should be running their combustion engines.
What it is. Let's be real clear and honest. My estimation is that the Green New Deal is running too fast. People don't understand it. People don't get what it means. And therefore, support for this very important piece of legislation or concept or project is much lower than it should be. The second thing is that you have to take into consideration the pace, and I'm being funny here, the pace at which Washington operates. It doesn't have a pace. It's just
incremental.
Incrementalism
no good.
The Green
that
New
won't save
Deal,
us.
I get the sense of it as being too much too quickly, and it does damage in a sense, because you really need to have people behind you on a mammoth piece of legislation like this, especially since it will inspire similar legislation around the world. You can't just introduce an idea, you know, at the beginning of the year, essentially, and expect that we're in March, that it should have picked up enough speed and support. No. They need to really do these things right. And I'm afraid they put the cart before the horse here.
I know. It's a little too late. Too little too late if you're going to ignore the biggest elephant in the room. The biggest thing, the biggest secret, the linchpin to any survival of this whole planet, I'll just put it that way, is for all the Chinese combustion engines, the Indian combustion engines, I'm talking diesel and gas, need to be converted. Very simple conversion. UPS ran their delivery trucks on natural gas for a while. Remember the tanks on the back bumper? That was pressurized liquid natural gas.
Again,
I'm saying
when they speak like this, it is not about wagging the finger of blame. That does not help us solve the situation. What it is getting us to understand the situation. Let's go there first. What is this Green New Deal? What is it? I don't know all the details of it. I mean, the fine details of it, except that I'm supposed to, demonize, as you just did, UPS. Well, if that was what they had at the time, and they found it to be an efficient part of running their business, could you blame them for making that choice? You know, it's like, I mean, we have to kind of up our game here. A situation has developed. It is critical. Fine. It does no good to say, well, UPS caused a problem.
No, the post office caused a problem. I apologize. I didn't mean to convey that caused a problem. I meant to use them as an example that you can run a gas engine on natural gas instead of gasoline. If you can do that, you can do it with hydrogen gas, not liquid. I'm saying that's the answer.
We are way short of education. This is the problem I have with movements like this.
Mm-hmm.
You have people who come to the fore and they're spokespeople and so forth, and I get that. But that is not really how you achieve results in a fight like this. Everybody has to be educated about it.
Yes.
And, you know, when people say, well, the Green New Deal, what the hell does that mean to the average person?
Right.
They don't know.
No.
And then you get the kind of insinuation that if you don't know, maybe you need, you know, you are from a different class of people. You ought to know. You're not an environmentalist. You're a hater.
I'm stupid. I'm not a smart person. What kills me is all the smart people are not talking about it. All the smart people,
but
all the Green New Deal, all the weather people, everybody investigating, it's not being spoken of because billions of dollars and a lot of effort have been spent to cover this very simple fact up. That you can run everything.
It's not about, we again have to look at it. It is not about covering up anything. It's about not educating people. And people, in turn, deciding not to educate themselves. The attitude is that people ought to just, you know, pull up someplace and open up their crania and the information gets pumped in. No. You have to make an effort. You have to make an effort to get to understand what is going on. And the people trying to move this thing forward, it's a hell of a task. They cannot underestimate the importance of popular education. Get people to know what it is you're talking about. I've talked about this same attitude as it concerns the Green Party. Okay, you're running in a presidential race. You're not in any of the communities I've been. People of color. It's as if you don't need them involved in this. They don't need to be bothered. You're taking care of business. So then go ahead. Go right ahead and frustrate yourself. People need to be educated. That's a fact. And if we have at this date to advise them of something that is so painfully obvious, that, you know, hold your horses, because when you start to fight, you want educated soldiers backing you up. The worst thing in the world is to have a soldier at your side with a gun and doesn't know where to point it. So we need to just slow down a little bit, gather our senses, and see how to formulate education to support mass movements. People may think, well, they'll catch on. No, it doesn't work like that. If you don't do it, the other side will do an even better job of miseducating the people. Thanks for your call today. Jose from Rosedale, you're on the air.
Thanks, my professor.
Hello.
I wish you a healthy, conscious, and progressive African Women History Month.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay. No, you know, you mentioned a moment ago about these politicians. I call them they're spineless and they're traitorous. That has given in to AIPAC and the other Jewish groups, lobbying groups. For all these decades, they have allowed them to become a real monster. They are now out of control. They have all these politicians from Washington to our state capitals to our council members. They have them all in their pockets. AIPAC has a budget of probably over $300 million to play around with, to bribe. Well, in America, they call it lobbyists, but they're simple folks who bribe our elected officials. We go off to the polls and do our civic duty, and we believe that we are contributing to making this country a real democratic society and live up to what it says it is. And then come along these fellows with these millions of dollars that corrupt these corruptible fellows, men and women are among it now too. And so we're here now wondering what happened. We have created a monster. Nobody's willing to challenge these young politicians that just got in office the other day. They're trying to bring about changes. But the old timers, the old groups that is accustomed to taking the bribes and living a good life and taking the junket to Israel every year, so many of them run to Israel to get the orders. And I've not seen any of them going down to the Caribbean or going to Africa to find out from our people what is going on, what can we do to help you and so forth. But they're rushing, they're stumbling over each other to run over to Israel. And which leads me into this other situation here. You mentioned like also power. Mr. Garvey mentioned it. The lack of power as a people. If you have no power, everybody is going to trample over you and stomp all over you. You have a case here in the Bronx just recently where Councilman Diaz, this man said something that, again, another powerful group of people. They have acquired this power over the years, and they are using it in a brutal and ruthless form. The man simply mentioned of the undue influence of the homosexual community, LGBT and so forth, in the city council. And he's not telling a lie. I've been to many of town hall meetings, and we have members there that tells you outright that they're homosexual. So it's not somebody accusing them of that. The speaker of the city council, he mentioned in the last town hall meeting I went to that he's that. And so this man simply mentioned it and the power that they have to punish you if you don't go along with your opinion.
You could never, ever persuade me that Reverend Diaz simply mentioned homosexuality. He has been a loud proponent of anti-homosexual legislation and action for a long time, and he's gotten away with it. He comes out of a church community that prides itself with being very godly, perhaps the godliest of godly people. And his thing is, I mean, he goes back a long way. And he has not been put in check. People have allowed him to come to the fore and to grow in political stature. Whose fault is that? Whose fault is it that you have these kinds of political representatives who are really carrying out their own religious agenda? He's a minister of one of the more, what should I say, conservative elements in the Latino community. And that's how he got elected to begin with. His people elected him. Where were the other people who said, no, it's good that you have some kind of religious fervor, but we're not electing you to be the world's pastor. And we, frankly, we shouldn't care what his personal attitudes are, because that is not supposed to be part of his mission. He will argue, well, I'm always a minister. I'm always, preaching for God. And whatever. These tired arguments should be put to bed. They should be retired. The central issue here is that you have a community that refused and still refuses to oppose it. What would you expect? If you sit back and you allow people to run roughshod over your community and make their particular identity your own, and their views are to be your views, if you want that, you'll get it. I talk all the time. Black people, Latinos, have, in many cases, no reason to complain, because they will not do what they are supposed to do to affirm their political identity and power. They won't do it. So you have, when it comes to the Black and Latino community, these two communities together, you have flotsam and jetsam. You have anybody who could scrape together a couple of dollars and run a campaign and get elected. That's what you got. You can't get angry. I tell people that all the time. Why are you angry? What is your argument? You have no argument. You relented. You surrendered. You went with the program. You decided that, well, at least we have somebody interested in representing the district. You don't care who or what they are. You're not involved. You're not participating in the empowerment of your community. So that's what you get.
But that is not the only. That's not the only thing that the representative is interested in. There are bills and other things that he has introduced and things he is delivering for his community.
But that's the issues that have come up that they have to deal with. Yes, bills are coming up, but there will be no decision until his constituency, the people who put him there and keep him there. Those people are to be satisfied first. They are the priority, not you, not me. They have absolutely no concept of what public service is. It shouldn't matter to us whether he is of this religion or that religion, or whether he believes this or he believes that when it comes to religious matters. That shouldn't even be part of the equation. What should matter is, what are his qualifications? What is it that he sees as the primary objectives that he can achieve in office as a leader? And that's all that matters. I don't want to know whether he is a member of this denomination or that denomination. I couldn't care less.
And I don't think that is an issue either. I don't think so.
I know, but it is. You go to any meeting called in the Bronx and you just look at the audience and see who they are. They're members of his church and other churches that are affiliated. In large measure, that's who they are. They come to take instruction the way they would if they were at church. They come to take instruction from the pastor.
The church members are not the only ones that are putting him in office. They can't be the only ones to put him in office. There are other members in the community that vote for him.
Sure. Okay. I'll give you that. Let's say that's true. Not that many to be significant, but okay. So if you have other people, the fact that he remains in office this long suggests what?
You know, I gather most times that we're living in a system where there are certain elements that believe that...
No, you're waving away from the question.
I'm not waving away. I'm just saying that
indeed there are other people...
In this
and
place, you have power, and you use that power to beat others over the head and get what it is, whatever your demands are or your agenda is. That is how you acquire it, through power. And they have acquired the kind of power that can punish whoever they want to, just as all the Jewish lobby has done the same thing. And other groups that will come along and do the same thing. And if you have no power, then you're subjected to either you have to bend over backwards or forwards or whichever way they want you to bend.
Or
it's about power. Who has the power to do whatever it is? In a little while, some other group, some other deviant group is going to come along and say, and they gain power and they want this demand. And it goes, and radio personalities and TV people and so forth will all acquiesce and go along with it because the power is there to get what they want and to use their funds to do whatever they want to. To co-opt whoever they want to co-opt.
Yeah, but that is a simple, if I dare say, even simplistic way of seeing it.
I don't think so.
The political arrangements in the African-American and Latino communities in the last, I'd say, 30, 40, 50 years, they really haven't changed. You
would
cannot...
Would these politicians... be the traitors that they are and selling out their country. If the Jewish lobbyists and the AIPAC and so forth didn't have the kind of funds that they have to put in their coffers, would they be the way they are today?
Well, guess what? The facts are that when it comes to their interests, the Jewish community is very, very actively concerned. And
I'm asking, without the funds that they have at their disposal to corrupt these corruptible politicians, wouldn't we be looking at a different scenario?
You're making a general statement, and it happens not to be true.
I think it is true. We have a matter of a difference of opinions. I think it is true.
You think it is?
I believe it is true.
But you believe it is, but it isn't.
But you don't have the facts to refute it. You're going by your opinion also. You have no facts to refute it.
You look at contributions. I haven't seen the latest figures, you're right. But they have followed a particular pattern. And there's no reason for me to believe that suddenly the pattern has either been disrupted or it has ended.
It is the money that is doing it and the ability to punish or to reward those who go along with them. Power.
Exactly. And that's called power.
If they didn't have that, they couldn't have these politicians at their beck and call. That's doing all these things that goes against the interest, the national interest of this country.
But you're working yourself into a lather over
I'm cool, my professor. I'm cool.
It's painfully obvious that different communities respond differently to what they believe their interests are. Look how many times I have talked about the need to have an emergency fund. All black communities need to have one in the event of police shootings. Has one ever popped up?
But what we have leadership in our community, my professor. And if you are and the leaders, the folks who know better, who have an understanding of what ails us as a people, and you have been found wanting, there's so many in our community that are supposed to be leaders, and they are not doing what. So what hope is there for the little people? As soon as you rise up and you try to do.
Hold on, Bring it down a couple of notches. Number one is you cannot escape this fact. Nobody is responsible for securing your interests than you. That's it. So you live in a black community. Great. Show me in your black community where your black businesses are located. Show me, despite the fact you have a church on every corner, show me the network you have among the churches to see to the needs of the elderly who are way below the poverty level. Show me interventions that they could undertake and have undertaken. It used to be that way. There was a time, which is why people, black people coming from the South, knew exactly where to go to live and to work. My aunt, who came from Trinidad, went directly to Harlem. Why? Because that was where Garvey was. And that's where a whole network of support services were available and opportunities that were available that were not available to black people outside of Harlem. She was able to buy a brownstone. She was able to run a boarding house for women, mostly women coming from the South looking for jobs in the North. She was able to open up a beauty parlor. She was able to establish a storefront church, and she was working in the post office until she retired and died. And all of it, you didn't have to get out of Harlem. You did not have to leave Harlem, although the social circumstances and economic circumstances made it almost compulsory. But they found a way to be self-sustaining communities. They had professionals, they had doctors, they had hospitals with black doctors right there in Harlem. So I do not buy the argument about what other people are doing to us. This is not news. This is the way it always has been. And still, there was progress. And still, there was power. Something happened, and now the attitude is that these distressed communities have to be looked after, okay? Well, what are you doing? Do you have a block association? No. Do you have an active parents association? No. Your bodegas are run by all kinds of people selling you green meat and whatnot who don't look like you. Do you have a car service that could provide some jobs? These things are not being done. People have relinquished responsibility for their own destiny. And we have to confront it because that is a fact. And it's been a fact for decades. And what happens is you have the cumulative effect, which we are seeing now. There's so much wrong. You really can't even begin to think where to start because everything is out of control. No housing, no jobs, no safety, no good schools. I talked about a school that I went to visit that was directly under a highway. If you were basketball height and you stretched your arm up, you would be touching the underside of a highway. Now you tell me. And the school has no windows. And people are sending their children to that school every day. And right down the block is the Democratic leader of Manhattan. And obliquely across the street is the office of Al Sharpton. We're not serious. We're not ready. We got to be ready. Thanks so much for your call, your input today. We will rejoin each other on Monday. Bye-bye.